You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Imagine you're being grabbed from your country. You're being put upon a ship and put across what is called the Middle Passage. And you get to Jamaica, and you are stripped, and you stand in a square, and people walk around and look at you. They feel you and determine whether they are going to buy you. And when you are bought, you are put on the plantation. There was no family life. It was not encouraged. If slaves developed relationships, they would take the children away. They would move or sell one of those partners to another plantation. And so what do we get today? We have countries where family life that our people knew in the places where they came from does not exist. Slaves were, fathers were never encouraged to look after their children. When can you imagine when the slaves heard that there was going to be an end to slavery and there were children to be born? They hid in caves. My great-grandmother was born in a cave to make sure that she was not born as a slave. And that is what Britain perpetuated.
Point of information.
Yes, I'll take it.
I agree that slavery is terrible, but I think that it has been an institution of humanity for thousands of years.
It does not make it right. Thank you. Thank you.
The Honourable Alum Dombey Asamba, speaking at Oxford Union for the motion, "This House believes Britain owes reparations to her former colonies," specifically on the topic of slavery. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 91 of the History Hotline. My name is Deanna Lynn Cook and I'll be your host today as always. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode. In today's episode, we're going to be thinking about a conversation that's currently occurring, but has happened in the past, to do with Richard Drax, who is a descendant of people that held slaves in Barbados and still hold the land that those slaves were forced to work on in the plantation known as Drax Hall in Barbados today. It's a conversation that's been happening for a while now, in the past few months, but also in years prior, because, well, you know, Barbados has been really, I think, thinking about some of the ramifications of colonialism on the island and parting ways with, you know, the Queen, as it were, then, and now the King as head of state, and really kind of thinking about the legacy of colonialism in their country and on their island. And Mia Motley's done a really good job in kind of, I think, forcing some of these conversations to happen and encouraging some of them and facilitating other nations in that part of the world to think about the legacy of colonialism, of enslavement, and the kind of what can happen next, shall we say, you know. How can this relationship between Britain and the empire, the former empire, that still exists in many ways today. How can this relationship continue? What are the next stages for it? You know, what will reparations look like? Will that be possible? So there's all these conversations going on, and I wanted to start the episode with Alum Dombey Asamba speaking at Oxford Union, just speaking about what slavery was like. And there are so many narratives of enslaved people, formerly enslaved, and those who died enslaved, who speak about the horrors of enslavement. And that was quite a light one, let's be honest. But this episode will go into some of the heavier and more brutal details of slavery. So that is a trigger warning for this episode. If isn't the episode for you today, then that's fair enough. As many of you regular listeners will know, I really don't like doing episodes about slavery, but at the moment, my PhD research has actually dragged me all the way back to the Caribbean in the kind of post-emancipation period, so like the 1860s and onwards, as I look at the education system. And it's kind of interesting when you like take out the kind of human element of enslavement and just look at like strictly the policy or the finances, or, you know, who owns the land and the names of those that were involved. When you strip out those kind of personal stories and you strip out human beings from something that was so human-centred, even though, you know, the people that were enslaved were literally classified as subhuman, I think it's a different kind of experience studying it. And that's why I wanted to start with that extract from Alum Dombey Asamba's speech, because it put the human element back into enslavement. And as we go through this episode, you know, I'm not really going to get into the stories of people that were enslaved per se. It will be kind of focusing on the legacies of slavery and the finances and this family, the Drax family, who have, you know, profited so much from Barbados, from the people that were taken from West Africa, and the work that they were forced to do in Barbados on the plantation. You know, it takes away the human element a little bit, and I don't want you to forget that as you listen to this episode. I want you to remember that, you know, for all these numbers of hundreds or thousands of enslaved people I mention, they're all individual people and they all have an individual story, and we won't probably ever know a lot of those people's stories, but they're still relevant, and they deserve to be thought about when discussing, I think, the consequences of enslavement and the legacy that leaves on a country and on a people. So let's start this story in a place we're somewhat familiar, or with a man we're somewhat familiar with. Richard Drax, full name Richard Grosvenor Plunkett, Earnley Earl Drax, 64 years old, Harrow educated Conservative MP for South Dorset, who has served continuously since 2010. Former Coldstream Guards officer and BBC journalist, a strong voice in the pro-Brexit campaign, an MP who believed lockdown restrictions were an experiment in authoritarian government, an MP who failed to publish accounts for four of his five companies since 2009, and a man who opposes the Black Lives Matter movement. In 2021, his estimated wealth was 150 million, but he had not declared the 621-acre sugar plantation in Barbados and an estate in Swaledale, North Yorkshire. He also owned a £4.4 million holiday let on Sandbanks, which is one of the most expensive areas for property in the UK. This man with so much wealth is, of course, MP for South Dorset. Child poverty is one of the highest in the country in Dorset, where he is MP. The southwest of England generally is fighting severe depravity as Westminster essentially strangles the life out of the region. But this man is MP there, holding all this wealth, not only in Britain, but overseas as well. And the reason this story comes to light is because of his failure to declare those for not only tax purposes, but also in terms of his interests as an MP. This breach of Section 448 was raised with Company House in late January 2021, as he failed to publish four of his five businesses for decades, essentially blaming his accountant for missing them off and the fact that the plantation in Barbados was in probate, as his dad had passed away in 2017. So his argument was that it hadn't been fully transferred over to him just yet. And I'm going to read an extract from a Guardian article written in April 2021 by Paul Lashmar and Jonathan Smith. And the extract states, Drax owns some 125 Dorset properties personally or through family trusts. The estate's finances have mostly been hidden from public scrutiny and involve at least six family trusts and as many financial entities. When Drax amended his registrar entry in January and correctly named the companies he owns, which relate to his farming interests, he grows poppies to make morphine for the NHS and barley for craft brewers. There were still problems. Four of the companies had not provided any accounts in the last decade. As both of his unlimited companies were subsidiaries of a limited company, under Section 448 of the Companies Act 2006, they should all have submitted accounts annually. Concerns about a Section 448 breach were raised with Companies House in late January. Over the last 2 weeks, some 50 documents from the four companies have appeared on the Companies House website, including a decade's worth of missing accounts. Two limited companies, said to have been dormant from 2009, are now shown to have been active. The unlimited companies have now filed accounts showing in some years hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of financial activity. All had been approved by Drax annually as late as November 2020. So not only is Richard Drax, you know, being called on to pay up in Barbados, there is a course and a claim and a conversation regarding maybe the amount of tax he should be paying or should have been paying in the past few decades due to his family trusts, businesses and companies in the UK too. Now, you know, I'm not an expert on tax, on businesses, on accounts, on money or anything of the sort, but I know that if I don't pay my taxes, then there is a chance that I will be going to prison. And I feel like the same rules just don't apply for everyone in this country. But that's not what we're talking about today. I will leave us with a quote from Alex Cobham, the chief executive of the Tax Justice Network. That was also quoted in this Guardian article. And he points out that under Companies Act, it was an offence for a person to, quote, knowingly or recklessly make a statement that is misleading, false or deceptive in a material particular with potential penalties, including imprisonment. And I'll leave that there. So that was a conversation happening in 2021 regarding tax, regarding, you know, the passing over of the property in Barbados and some of the limited companies and family trusts in the Drax family name. But this is a very wealthy family. This is crazy wealth in the grand scheme of the UK and in the grand scheme of Barbados, most definitely. And now we're going to rewind. Going to take it all the way back to the 17th century, where the first Drax finds himself in Barbados. And to kind of, you know, narrate some of this story, and probably one of the most, I would say, important kind of people speaking and doing this work regarding Drax, regarding Barbados, regarding enslavement legacies, is Sir Hilary Beccles. He is a Bayesian historian. He is the current Vice Chancellor of the University of the West Indies. He is chairman of the CARICOM Reparations Committee. His historical work covers, you know, such big and broad topics regarding slave rebellions in Barbados, the impact of colonialism and empire on society, Barbados society today, Bayesian history, education, telecommunications, labour movement, sporting culture, cricket, and so much more. So I thought I'd start with the kind of explanation he's given in more recent times about the Drax family. And this is an extract of him speaking on the Times Radio. And explaining more about the Drax family in the early days.
The first of the Draxes to arrive in Barbados in the 1630s, and having lost a lot of their wealth in the Civil War, came to Barbados to create slavery in order to regain some of the wealth they had lost in the Civil War in Britain. And it was Drax who was one of the leading architects of slavery. He was one of the leading designers of slavery. You know, Drax was an architect of the idea that Black people were not human beings. The Draxes are not just property owners. They're not just people who own property and slaves and so on. They were the designers. They were the architects. It came out of the imagination of people like Peter Drax.
They were not just property owners. They were the architects of slavery in Barbados. Please, if you're going to take anything from this episode, the Drax family were not just property owners that grabbed a little bit of what they could from enslavement. They were some of the architects of enslavement on the island of Barbados. James Drax arrived in Barbados in the 1630s with around £300. And in a letter found in his, you know, personal property and in his...
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
His personal effects, it states, and he's writing to a friend, that he's gone there with £300 and he intends to leave with £300,000 and believes he will do this using slave labour and the slave trade. And well, we can all guess the end of that story is that he is more than even twice or 10 times or 100 times over successful in what he intended and claimed he would do when he arrived. Draxwell Estate was where the first sugar cane was cultivated in 1642. The hall remains one of only two remaining Jacobean houses in Barbados. There is no family in Britain that has been so consistently and persistently attached to slavery in Barbados than the Drax family. This is beyond just one plantation. This is beyond one, you know, man. This is generations of a family owning and profiting off the land and labour of this nation for the longest time, longer than any other family, apart from probably the royal family. And it's a bit more of a complicated history with them. They essentially, and what Sir Hilary Beckles meant when he was saying they're the architects, they created and managed enslavement. They advised other plantation owners how to run their houses, their plantations, how to keep the slaves in check. They're the only family in Britain that have an unbroken link to the wealth of slavery from inception to today, bar the royal family. But again, as I said, it's a more complicated story there. Other names that come up in the story of slavery in Barbados are Christopher Codrington and Henry Lascelles. And whilst, again, enormous amounts of wealth coming into these families, there is like nobody coming close to the Drax family. They passed legislation, the original Draxes, passed legislation that any African brought to Barbados would be deemed and classified as subhuman, non-human, a form of property, a form of, like, you know, chattel, essentially, and shall be enslaved for life. And it was the beginning, it was constitutional in some ways, and the beginning of this idea that an African person and all their descendants would be enslaved. This is put into law by this family. It's one of the first laws to be put in place in this country. And one of the first laws is that what will become the majority population of the country, people of African descent, are deemed non-human, and property. It protected the rights of slaveholders, plantation owners, and legally allowed them to do what they continue to do for decades, holding African people as property and deeming them as unequal, subhuman, not worth the same treatment that a human being or even an animal would receive. Again, this is work done by Sir Hilary Beckles. This is work that is put together through the UCL Slave Ownership Database, the legacy of British slavery that I'm using today in terms of research for this episode. Now, Drax Hall Estate is founded by William Drax in 1669. And the records within UCL go on to say that by 1691, it's passed into the hands of a Charles Drax. 1713 and 1715, part of the land is sold at two different stages, bringing the size of the plantation to be a little bit smaller. However, it's the main part is still owned by the Drax family. So we whiz all the way down to 2021, and it's owned by Richard Drax, MP for South Dorset today. So as you can see, it's a very clear chain of command. It's a clear chain of ownership from the top all the way to today. It's very clear. We can identify, we can see the wealth, we can literally track it. It's literally written down on the UCL website for the legacies of British slavery. You know, it's in British records, Barbados records, for land ownership, for tax purposes. It's a very clear-cut story. The question with reparations, and we're not at that part of the episode yet, but the question is always like, oh yeah, well, but who should pay them? Like, how would we get them from the right people? How would we know that it was that family that benefited from enslavement, or their ancestors held slaves? Oh, here we go. For one of the first times, and probably one of the only cases we will have across the whole Caribbean, of a family that we can see from the beginning to today exactly how they have benefited and profited from enslavement. Drax Hall was the largest plantation in the English-speaking Caribbean and the largest functioning sugar slave plantation in the whole of the West Indies. By the 1650s, he was the richest sugar plantation owner in the West Indies. That's only 20 years after he arrived in the early 1630s. He was the first, essentially, you know, in today's money, multi-millionaire from enslavement in the Caribbean. It's not really an accolade you want to hold. But at the time, it would have been something to be proud of. He built Drax Hall Mansion out of the first 10 years of profit. And, you know, because of this wealth and having so much on an island like Barbados, which, you know, is smaller than some of the other islands in the Caribbean, it's everybody would know each other, especially at that time. He was described as the Prince of Barbados due to his wealth. The Prince. This is based off of the backs of enslaved Africans. It was the first mansion built by a slave owner in the whole of the West Indies, and it's still there today in Barbados, standing tall.
Oh, my ancestors, so late for me to unwrap, layer by layer, this gift of your silence. But today I place my birth call over my eyes so I may see. And I weep for the bones I find here.
Esther Phillips, Barbados's poet laureate, grew up in the shadow of Drax Hall.
I was always conscious of Drax Hall because it surrounded us, actually. It was on the east, the west, and the south.
One of the oldest slave plantations in the Caribbean. Over the centuries, thousands toiled and died, producing the sugar that made its British owners fabulously rich. A place etched in Esther's memory from childhood.
Going as a small child to Drax Hall with a skillet to collect milk. My grandfather kept cows in Drax Hall yard. And there's a sense of shame, a sense of guilt in knowing that I could have grown up so many years and not know what this plantation house symbolized, what it meant. I had no idea that when we were running and playing, on the lands there, that we were actually running and playing and walking over the bones of our ancestors.
And that was Esther Phillips speaking on a Channel 4 News report that's now on YouTube, titled Calls for Drax Hall to be Open to Public as Barbados Becomes a Republic, from about a year ago. And I just felt like that clip was so chilling. It not only speaks to this, you know, physical legacy that can't be ignored because it takes up so much of the island, especially for people that live in that area, but also the fact that the legacy went unknown for so many. Esther Phillips, as a child, not knowing that she was potentially walking on the graves of her ancestors. Now, if that's not chilling, I don't know what is. And the fact that, you know, the family aren't there to use the property, or as far as I understand. It's not like it's a fully running house or operation. It's in part used, I believe it was used in part for agriculture, for other people. But it just stays there. It's private property. You can't go on it. And, you know, what has that big eyesore of a building and land gonna have as a permanent reminder to people that live there and know that their ancestors suffered at the hands of this family?
For me, as a historian and other historians, beyond just the physical space, it would be interesting to take a look into the records to understand what's the history? What did our ancestors go through? What was the run of that plantation like, given that theoretically you should have records spanning at least two centuries or more?
How important is it to get access to Drax Hall to find out more about what happened there?
We don't know where the enslaved village is. We don't know where the enslaved burial ground is. We have no way of reconstructing the life ways of the enslaved using archaeology as a discipline because we don't have access to the site.
How many enslaved people could be buried there?
Hundreds.
Hundreds?
Hundreds.
And again, from the same Channel 4 News YouTube video, that was Kevin Farmer, historian at Barbados Museum and the deputy director of the museum, speaking about the kind of physical legacy and what is lost, you know, with the inability of being able to access Drax Hall and the records that it holds and the site itself in terms of the graves of those people that reside there. And, you know, even though they have passed away, and I've seen it done in Jamaica at different former plantation sites, whereby, you know, the remains of enslaved people are removed because they are not buried respectfully. They're not buried taking into consideration burial rites of the traditions that those people of African descent might have held. And so they are given a respectful burial after their bodies are exhumed. Now, I don't know if that is something that is in conversation about regarding Drax Hall and in Barbados, but Kevin Farmer alluded to the fact that, well, he said, you know, there are hundreds of enslaved people buried there. And just wanted to give you like a rundown of the numbers, because this is a family that from the inception of enslavement in Barbados held slaves from the first possible moment that they could. They did. They brought it over. They were the architects. To this day, they still own that land, just reminding you in case you forgot. But essentially, it's believed that around 30,000 people are likely to have died at the hands of that family over those generations, if you do the kind of maths. Now, the life expectancy of an enslaved person kidnapped from West Africa in the Caribbean was about 7 years. And that's why the turnover of people, of human beings, is so high. Because they weren't expected to live. They were worked to death, essentially. You know, it was not a case that I think we often think about enslaved people and somehow them, you know, growing to old age. And, oh, they're not really useful for the plantation anymore because they're older and they'll go and work in the house and do something else or look after the children and raise them to be enslaved people. Well, it didn't actually work like that for the majority, especially in the Caribbean, where the work they were doing is back-breaking physical labour in the sun. A lot of the time, they didn't make it beyond a certain age. And, you know, assuming they were taken as teenagers in their 20s, they weren't really making it to their 30s or 40s.
And that's the reality of enslavement. That's why the slave trade took so many people, because they would not survive the conditions. Now, I've literally Googled this twice because I can't believe what I'm about to say. So I've like double checked this three times from my notes because I was thinking, surely this isn't true. 600,000, or it's estimated so, Africans were brought to Barbados in the years of the slave trade occurring and existing. At the point of emancipation, 83,000 were alive to be freed. Less than 20% survived enslavement in Barbados. That, just to put into context of the 600,000 people that were brought to Barbados in that time, 280,000 is a population of Barbados, give or take, today. So that's like double the population today of the island was brought to the country, to only leave 83,000 of them, less than 20%. Hilary Beckles, in a talk that I listened to about this, said that slavery in Barbados was genocide. And there isn't really a better word for it, because anything that's wiping out 80% of the population is surely a genocide. In 1675, the first rebellion on the island was attempted, and enslaved people planned to, you know, make their first attempt at freedom. Unfortunately, the plan was foiled, essentially. They were found out before they were able to really get it off the ground. I mean, it's at this point that it's like the second generation of Drax. Henry Drax is running the plant.
Hi, Uncle Laser here. America's built on fast cars, fast food, and even faster women. Photo Casino's built in America. You know what they're fast at? Fast cash prize redemption. You see, only Moto is U.S. owned and operated. Moto, it's American made. That's who we are, and that's who we care about. Play for free at Moto.us.
Moto Casinos, the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
And I think his response to this act of rebellion, to this escape for freedom, really does summarise and really does epitomise the stance that family had and the treatment that they believed these people deserved. And again, I gave a trigger warning at the start of the episode, but this does get quite graphic. So, after the attempt was foiled, they captured over 120 Africans who they accused of trying to free themselves and, you know, attempt to escape. And they just decided that 120 of them were guilty. I don't know any successful plan or plot that is literally orchestrated by 120 people. It's a large planning committee. I've seen smaller committees not manage to pull it off. So, you know, the fact that they've accused 120 people of it already says enough for me. However, of the 120, they had to decide how they were going to discipline and punish them to make sure it didn't happen again. And so they set up a bonfire on the land, and they burnt 47 of them alive as punishment. Another 30 men were taken and castrated until they bled out to death. And that was the punishment. That was all in law. That was not an overreaction by any means in their eyes, because that was their legislation. That was how they had agreed that they would treat enslaved people. It was allowed, it was encouraged. They had to come down hard because, as we know, as they've put into the law, these are not human beings, this is property. And to make sure this property did as it was told, that was the consequence. Now, this is only the second generation of the Drax family that would have participated and owned slaves, but this behaviour, this kind of training up of other plantation owners of how to treat their enslaved people continues on. You know, we have descendants creating pamphlets and writing manuals, which will be discussed in this clip taken from the wonderful Channel 4 YouTube video that I've used so much of today.
This is an instruction manual of how to manage a plantation, and it's from 1786. And one of the authors in this is Edward Drax. And in here, you see the attitude towards enslaved people. The blacks are commonly addicted to thieving. If it be for their belly, it's more excusable. But I hope none of mine will ever have occasion to be thieves for want. But if at any time they are taken stealing sugar, molasses, or rum, they must be severely handled.
And yeah, just another example, really, of the way in which enslaved people would have been treated through the generations. You know, that was from the 18th century, and they started out there in the early 17th century. So this is already bordering on 150 years of the Drax family, let alone the fact that they're literally there till today. So this is decades. And as time went on, they, you know, continued to advise the rest of the plantation owning few of how to deal with some of the issues they faced as slave owners. And, you know, some of them were family breeding when it came to the end of the slave trade, whereby it was illegal to take enslaved people, African people from Africa to bring them over through the Middle Passages on that triangular trade. That was illegal prior to actual enslavement being illegal. And, you know, there's an actual time period, especially in the Caribbean. I've read about it in Jamaica, and I assume it was a lot of the Anglophone Caribbean, that they had a shortage of labour even prior to the end of the slave trade. And this was not being helped by the fact that women in their kind of form of rebellion would commit infanticide, would have forced abortions, would not carry their babies to term if they got pregnant, or they would take the life of the baby so that they would not be born into enslavement. Just like the clip we had at the start of the episode from Alun Dombe Asamba talking about her great-grandmother being born in a cave because it was so close to emancipation and they knew it was coming, and she did not want her mother did not want her to be born an enslaved person. You know, this is so close. You're hearing it. This lady speaking about her great-grandmother. It shows quite scarily just how recent that period of enslavement is for so many families. It's within, you know, traceable memory. She can trace back to her great-grandmother. That means her great-great-grandmother was enslaved. This idea that these things happened so long ago that it's all untraceable and we can't figure out where money would come from and who it should go to is crazy to me. It doesn't really make sense. But anyway, back to the Drax family and what they did to solve the problem of the lack of labour because women were not having enough children. They decided to incentivise and to engage in what was essentially known as slave breeding, financially encouraging and probably somewhat forcibly encouraging them to have children by giving money, and it was 5 shillings for the first child, 10 shillings for the second child, and it went up to the point that if a woman had 6 children, 6 children to be enslaved, she would be given her freedom. Not with the 6 children, she would be freed alone, and those 6 children would be taken and used on the plantations. But that is how much, you know, they needed, and especially men. You know, they didn't really, whilst women In some cases, might have picked cotton. This was a sugar plantation. The labour that goes into producing sugar is intense. It's insane. And this is pre-industrial revolution. This is pre, you know, some of the equipment and machinery that exists and even existed in the, you know, 19th, 20th century. And this is laborious. This is obviously why they've taken enslaved and enslaved people to do this work. But the fact that even then women were still not giving birth quickly enough, I think just shows just how resistant they were to giving birth to children that were going to live this life that they had only known and been accustomed to. And again, it just shows the Drax family being the architects of some of the most barbarous practices on the island. And again, you know, this is a document that was used all over the Caribbean. They were like the equivalent of influencers, but for slavery, for exploitation, for greed, all for the sake of profit and wealth and power and status that they didn't have at home. I think for me, one of the saddest parts about the kind of whole Drax family, the Drax legacy, the Drax name, the, you know, everything, kind of links to, well, my first response when I heard Drax and slavery was the fact that there is a Drax Hall in Jamaica. I was like, surely not. Because the only conversation that was going on was Barbados and Mia Motley calling for reparations because of what the Drax family had done in Barbados. And I'm thinking, yeah, but Drax isn't like that common of a name. I've only ever heard it in relation to enslavement, but there's definitely a Drax Hall in Jamaica. And I'm thinking, surely not, surely not, surely they were only in Barbados. No, of course they were in Jamaica too. And I've managed to go this whole episode without saying Jamaica, I think, in a bid to diversify the Caribbean countries that I speak about. However, got to get them in somewhere. So I just wanted to basically speak about that, and using the UCL database again, there was, the Drax family did, you know, try and make it in Jamaica. They weren't, you know, in blunt and plain terms, as successful as they were in Barbados, and end up selling the land in Jamaica quite early on in the 19th century. But essentially, they were also, yeah, in Jamaica. And why they weren't actually successful in Jamaica is part of the reason why the story is so sad about Barbados. And that's because when abolition happened and the enslavement was made illegal in around 1833, you know, the formerly enslaved people were now deemed free. In some countries and islands, there was a period of apprenticeship, which could last up to 7 years, where they were essentially a continuation of enslavement, let's just call it that. However, you know, I think emancipation, and when I think about it as kind of a moment historically, this kind of moment of emancipation is like this big thing that has been building up to. These abolition movements, these rebellions, these revolts, all lead up to, you know, the law being passed and it being declared illegal and not something that can happen anymore. But the majority of people, and I say majority, I do mean the vast majority of people, the descendants of African descent that are on the island, all they know is agricultural work. All they know is slave labour. What can they do as jobs, realistically? They can't do anything else. They haven't been given an education for a lot of the cases. They don't have any money because they've been working for free their whole lives. They don't have any property. They don't have anywhere to live. There's like nothing for them. They aren't even in, while some of them would have been born in, say, Barbados, in the country that they found themselves in. Some of them are maybe away from home and knowing that. Many of them wouldn't have survived that long. So it really wouldn't be people that were transported over for the most part by 1834. And it's at this point where you know, this big law has passed and it's like this big hooray moment, or that's how I used to see it historically. But these people, for the most part, woke up the next morning and went straight back to work for their former masters. But now they were paying them a pittance, that be said. They weren't housing them anymore. They weren't feeding them anymore. And that's obviously not to say that enslavement was a better deal, because it wasn't. But for the most part, they had to go back. And this is the story of Barbados. This isn't the story of Jamaica, because Jamaica as an island is a bit bigger. There are more options of people, of where people can live. And because of the communities like the Maroons that lived up in the hills, and essentially lived as not necessarily the Maroons, but the formerly enslaved people that decided to go to the hills and the caves to live, lived as a class of peasantry, essentially, because they refused to go back and work for those people they had to call master. And it led to a labour shortage in Jamaica, actually. And it meant that agriculture out there was less profitable, which is why the Drax family sold their property in Jamaica, because they couldn't get people to work on it, because they chose poverty as opposed to working for the people they had to call master for so many years. People in Barbados, the formerly enslaved, did not have that option. The island is mostly flat. There's limited options of where to go. So essentially they became free and went back to work for their former masters. They continued to work there until modern times for the same Drax family that now sits on £150 million of wealth in the UK. This is the legacy of that family in Barbados. And this is why it is so ridiculous that this family are doing little to nothing except for saying it was regrettable that this happened. And as we somewhat draw this episode to a close and think about reparations, and what Bajans want them to look like and what they can look like in this case, I think it's important for us to think about the Drax family at abolition and at the point of emancipation in the 1830s, and just to see the work that they were doing at that moment with, back again with Sir Hilary Beckles on the Times radio, just another clip from the video taken from YouTube earlier.
Now, you have to understand the full context of this, in which you wish to insert Mr. Drax into that legacy of the 200 years of free labor from people who were defined as not human but property. And then he collects.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot.
Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
The Drax family collected their compensation money at emancipation, because the Drax family fought tooth and nail against emancipation. They were in the vanguard of the struggle to block the emancipation legislation. And the Drax family in the 1820s were out there on the frontier fighting tooth and nail to block the emancipation legislation. Then they collected the £4,000, which is about £15 million in today's money. But critically, they held on to their plantation and they held on to the workers who were emancipated. The workers who were emancipated were trapped on that plantation. They and their children 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 up to today. 180 years later.
So we have it there, down to the final moments of enslavement they were fighting tooth and nail for the existence of this institution to continue. And I believe they also were part of the lobbyist movement against, you know, the passing of the Abolition Act. They would pay, and I don't know which Drax it was at this point, to be honest. I've lost count of them all. It's like the fifth, sixth generation of Drax. They would pay other people in the UK that had influence and power and status to vote against abolition and against the Act, so that the institution of slavery could continue and continue to turn them a profit. And now for conversation about reparations, that I don't think I've ever fallen down on one side of the line when I think about reparations. And I think it stems from the fact that as someone of the Caribbean diaspora, living in Britain and being born and raised here and being here all my life and benefiting in so many ways from the wealth of this country through healthcare, education, you know, quality of life generally, it's very difficult for me to position myself in this conversation about Caribbean islands having reparations. Now, I think that reparations, if you couldn't tell from this episode, are most definitely necessary and needed. But I've always been unsure about what form they could take realistically, what would be most helpful to, you know, the ordinary person on some of these islands. And that's, you know, this is me just thinking about the Caribbean as a consequence of enslavement and colonialism there. That's not then opening up the conversation to countries within Africa that were pillaged of natural resources and people, countries in Asia that might have had a combination of many things torn apart by war, by partition. Like, I don't even know where I would begin with that. And because I don't know the context as well as I know the context in the Caribbean, it's not really something I will speak on. But when I think about the Caribbean, if the British government is paying reparations, that's the UK taxpayer. That's me. I am the descendant of enslaved people. That doesn't feel like it makes sense. The fact alone that in 2015, the UK taxpayer was finishing paying off the debt given to the owners of enslaved people at the point of abolition in 1834, to me, is already insane enough, because essentially the descendants of enslaved people of that Windrush generation from other different groups of communities from all over the world that would have been impacted by empire and colonization were the ones who ended up paying off that debt, in some cases, not all. And that's the thing. It's like the British government compensated those people that lost property, as they were decided that they would have been called, in, you know, the passing of the Abolition Act. But then it was, again, the British public who ancestrally, in terms of their grandparents, may not have even stepped foot in the Caribbean, may not even have been of a class to even contemplate owning human beings as property, who were also paying by that debt. But then you can think about it in another way. And we think of people like Edward Colston, who used all the money he had from enslavement to build hospitals and you know, to give to the poorer parts of society in Britain. You know, people benefited here that may not have been directly descendants of those who profited from slavery, like Richard Drax. And I'm coming to him in a second, don't you worry. You know, this country has benefited from the wealth of slavery outside of looking at direct family lines and descendants. The whole infrastructure, the whole funding of the Industrial Revolution, you know, the buildings. There are literal buildings in the UK that have plaques on that says this building is funded by the slave trade. This building is funded by enslavement. This country has so much to answer for, financially alone. And that's not even thinking about the cultural impact of enslavement on these countries, something that money cannot buy. Money cannot bring back people's traditions and spiritual beliefs and foods and languages. And they go beyond just slavery. This is the whole of colonialism and the British Empire. And I'm going to pass over to my good friend, Sir Hilary Beckles, because he's questioned on this, and it's what drew me to the Times radio interview, because it was him responding to the journalist that was saying, oh, well, this is great, you know, we've got Richard Drax. We've got the case of someone who's a direct descendant of enslavement. We've got clean-cut lines, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, clean-cut lines of the wealth and the money that they have managed to gain from enslavement. Here we are. We can take this money. We can the country can be you know, given reparations. A call can be made, and quite a clean cut and simple one in many cases.
But I guess the question that follows, Hilary, is what's the consequence now? Should there be some sort of economic reckoning? Because that would have made vast amounts of money. It would have been economically viable because they were using slaves rather than paying a fair wage. And that wealth has resided in the family for centuries. That point is very clear. I guess the question always, and maybe this is a unique situation because the wealth has remained in one identical family with one identical institution, one plantation, and more, as you've been saying. What's the consequence now, though? Is there a figure you can put on it? Is that what we should be doing?
We find that the narrative you have just given to be totally unacceptable, and it's a distortion. This is why. When the Drax family were part of that legislating that black people were not human beings, the psychological, cultural, epistemological consequences of that denial of your humanity, and then the enforcing of that for all of these centuries, that is the greatest crime that has ever been committed. The greatest crime that has ever been committed is to deny people their humanity, their right to a human identity, and to use your legal and military power to enforce that for centuries. When you try to reduce this conversation to a matter of how much money they made and how much wealth they have, let me tell you, that is a part of the conversation, but that is not the center of the conversation. The center of the conversation is a family that use its legal and military power within the context of the British Empire to degrade 600,000 people for 200 years in the first instance and turning Barbados into a tomb.
A whole lot can be said about reparations and what they should look like and could look like. And the speaker I started with, the Honourable Alun Dombey Samba, speaking in her Oxford Union address in regards to the debate that was occurring about reparations and whether the British Empire should pay them. You know, she speaks about other kind of forms of reparation, like training and education and health services. And of course, all these things cost money, but they're some of the things that lack in that region of the world because of empire and because of everything that happened there. And, you know, one of the, I think, biggest calls in this case with Richard Drax is that the very least, his family should hand over Drax Hall and the plantation land to the government of Barbados so it can be a heritage site. Just like I believe, you know, there is already there on the island, and that already exists for some of the other former plantations. And so the calls right now, at the very least, are for that family to just hand over that land. And so in that sense, whilst yes, it's a financial sacrifice for the Drax family, they would be giving up the wealth that is held in that property and in that land could then be used by Barbados, you know, by way of opening up these heritage sites and using it in the case of tourism. You know, it would obviously provide them with jobs, with wealth, with money. In some ways, and that's just kind of one of the calls in this case anyway, in the situation here. But I'm going to pass over to Professor Pedro Welsh of the Barbados Reparations Task Force, speaking more about the idea of reparations.
There are a number of facets to reparations. One of them is that you need to invest in the various Caribbean countries. We came into independence, this country, and there's absolutely nothing that was given to support countries, our country, and countries that were suffering from centuries of neglect and suffering the legacy of enslavement. Nothing was given.
Richard Drax, he has said that it is regrettable, but that has given the sentiment that also this is in the past. He can express regret, but essentially this isn't on him.
You inherited it, and you could not be the owner of the plantation had it not been for the blood, the sweat and tears of the people who work there. They're the ones who made you. And whether you accept it or not, you have a responsibility to repay some of that for them.
And I will say that is something I do wholeheartedly agree with. That clip, again taken from the Channel 4 News YouTube video, calls for Drax Hall to be open to public as Barbados becomes a republic. This video came out a year ago in the kind of conversation of Barbados breaking ties with Britain and removing the Queen as the head of state, and, you know, thinking about this kind of next step in regards to confronting the legacies of empire colonialisation and enslavement in this case with the Drax family. And so this is where I will be departing and leaving you here. I can't believe I've spoken for an hour. It's probably the longest episode I've done in months. But I wanted to say thank you so much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. I do realise that putting an episode out like this on the 21st of December, so close to Christmas, is probably a little bit heavy and probably too much. So, you know, I assume that maybe you're not listening to it when it came out during Christmas. And something I apologise for, because this episode was supposed to come out last week, you'll probably have noticed there was a gap. But due to lifing, PhD, PhDing, and, you know, everything being quite busy, to be honest, this episode didn't come out last week, and it should have. And so this week I was supposed to do a food episode about some of the wonderful Caribbean delicacies we see at Christmas. That will be coming out next week instead. And I am thinking about potentially putting out episodes fortnightly instead of weekly. It's a conversation I'm having with myself and I will continue to have over the next few weeks and reach a conclusion very soon. But I have enjoyed actually taking essentially 2 weeks to work on this episode and actually produce an hour of what I think is better quality content. And so maybe this will be a better way to work this podcast moving forward, as it's still a solo affair. And, you know, I still do have a PhD and a job and other commitments that all are really beginning to add up. But for now, it will be a weekly enterprise. And I have hope you enjoyed this episode, and I hope you tune in to many, many more. Thank you so much for listening today. Please, if you've enjoyed this episode or any other episodes, tell a friend to tell a friend. Follow us on social media at The History Hotline on Instagram, at The History HL on Twitter. We also have accounts on YouTube, LinkedIn, and this podcast is available on all good podcast platforms. So you've got no excuse. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful week and a happy Christmas if you're celebrating. Goodbye.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You're listening to a podcast right now, driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.